sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Welcome, everybody, to another session of Sex and Happiness, the radio show about sex and happiness. And I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And I have another exciting show for you today. My question today for you is, have you ever wondered what it would be like to have multiple partners? Have you ever been bi-curious? Experts say that most people are bi-curious, only not everybody would tell the truth. So I guess you'll have to see for yourself in listening to this show today if you are curious about the possibilities of more than one lover at the same time, and if you're open to having somebody in your life or a lover who is of the same gender as you. Are you bi-curious enough to ever have that experience? My guest today is Serena Angelini D'Onofrio, and she's a PhD, and I'll tell you about her and her works and stuff, but first I want to tell you what she believes in. Serena believes in a world where it is safe to love, and such a world is a world where it is safe to live. I like that. She's a scholar, she's a writer, an activist, a professor, and a cultural theorist. Her book of ecosexual theory, Gaia and the New Politics of Love, is a 2010 Nautilus winner in cosmology and new science. She is editor of Bitopia, Bisexuality and Queer Theory, Plural Loves, Designs for Bi and Poly Living, and Women and Bisexuality, A Global Perspective. Her memoir, Eros, A Journey of Multiple Loves, was a 2007 Lambda finalist. She's a professor of humanities at the University of Puerto Rico, Mayagüez. Okay, Serena, what a list there of accomplishments and publications. It's great to have you on Sex and Happiness today.
Thank you, Laurie. It's an actual a wonderful pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. I appreciate your openness about the subject, your writing about the subject, and I want to delve right into it so that we clear up any mysteries that anybody has about it and that we actually perhaps inspire people to move past boundaries that they've had or set their boundaries stronger if they have no desire to experiment or experience any of this. So first of all, I want to ask you, what does it mean? Like when we talk about having more than one partner, I've interviewed some guests before who were into polyamory, but they never really talked about bisexuality. So polyamory would be having more than one love.
Yes. Definitely.
But my guests before never really, even, they didn't even put their toe into the water of bisexuality or what that exactly would mean. So could you talk a little bit about that to start?
Yes, I am delighted to do that. And I'm really happy to start from there because for me, that's what really opened up this whole world of an experience of love that is more complete. And I'm not saying that this applies to everyone, but my theory is that it's a good idea to try how one feels around these boundaries. And as a humanist, I really look at things in a context, in the context of what human life has been on this planet. And when you look at that, you see that why do we even have the concept of bisexuality today? Why? Because in the modern era, there's been a Berlin Wall or an Iron Curtain that has divided homosexuality from heterosexuality. In antiquity, these concepts didn't exist, and people meandered from at times in life when one was more dedicated to loving people of the same gender and experimenting with them erotically, and times when one was more focused on the other gender. And there was never a decision to be made on which side of the Iron Curtain one was placed. And when you look at today's world where the Iron Curtain has fallen, the Berlin Wall has fallen, I would say it's about time to allow this wall to also fall and see that really being open to loving the person and not the gender of the person is what makes the energies of love flow. So to me, bisexuality is more like a portal to a world where love is loved. See, when I say a world where it is safe to love is a world where it is safe to live, is because love is the ecology of life. Love is what makes life alive. And so when we demolish that wall, we create a world where the energy of love, which for the Greeks in antiquity was called the energy of Eros, the ancient god of love, can circulate freely without those barriers, which doesn't mean that for everyone it has to be the same. It's always a good thing to have boundaries around oneself. But when you look at the fact that we all have been acculturated to believe that there is an Iron Curtain, then we find out that it's just a cultural construction. And there is no Iron Curtain. And it's just as it was before. I don't know if the metaphor makes sense to you, but that's really the way I see it. I see the world evolving toward fluid, a sort of a sense of sexual fluidity where these boundaries are a lot more flexible. I don't know if that helps.
I'm following you. I understand the analogy you mean of the Iron Curtain, like of having the Berlin Wall or the Iron Curtain where we didn't speak to communist countries, and now there is no that anymore, except in one little island. And so those are coming down. I actually don't call those boundaries. I want to say I call those barriers.
Okay.
I have like a distinction between boundaries and barriers. I look at
exactly.
barriers as impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
They are like an Iron Curtain, and boundaries I see as permeable membranes, like cellular walls, where they're one cell thick and we let in nutrients and we keep out toxins. And so when I look at boundaries, I see them as necessary perhaps in one time or other or in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they feel honored, like I feel like if I say no to something,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm saying no to a person about something and then they honor my no,
mm-hmm.
I may not need that no or that boundary,
mm-hmm.
because the honoring of it showed me something, that the person was willing to nurture me in a way, like respect me in a way. And so I don't always need that boundary
mm-hmm.
permanently. So that's how I look at those things. But I'm definitely following you, and I see what you're saying in terms of in different ages, in different eras of time in history, there were different people flirted with one thing or another. Their turn on was same sex, or then their turn on was opposite sex, or their turn on was multiple partners, or they had all kinds of things. So I see what you're saying, that right now we're in a pendulum swing of only one way, mm-hmm. and it's starting to get mutated a little bit. That's really what you're saying. Yeah,
thank you. I can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, sure.
Well, for example, there are two examples I use from antiquity. There is the famous poems by the lyrical poet Sappho, who, you know, a lot of people very reductively associate with lesbianism, which is not a totally wrong association, but there is a whole lot more. At that time in Lydia, which is near where today is Turkey, and particularly the island of Lesbos, there were schools of philosophy for girls, for young women. And the teachers were older women, adult women. And one of the arts that were taught in these schools, besides, say, music, and another art was the art of loving. So who was your teacher of love in that time? It was a person of your gender. Why? Because if you really want to teach hands-on the arts of love, it's easier to teach, to learn from someone who has the same plumbing as you have.
Right.
Okay. So then there was a sort of graduation, which was this initiation into adulthood, at which point the woman who had learned the arts of loving, not necessarily all in hands-on lessons, because some lessons really have to do more with the spiritual aspects of love, but then would graduate and move into a different chapter of life where she would be perhaps married to a man. And then, so you see what I mean? What happened at that time was that the education to love was important because people believed that it was good for society for people to learn how to love, to learn the techniques, to learn the spiritual aspects of love and the practical aspects of love, and to really become capable of generating love. Today, we often think of love as a need. Say, you know, everybody needs love. But interpreting love as a need automatically creates scarcity around love. Everybody wants to get it, but nobody knows how to generate it. Whereas when we think of love as something that we can learn, then we can learn how to produce it.
See? That's beautiful. And that is so key and critical, what you're saying. I love that. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I love that. I really believe that people need to generate what they want.
Exactly.
If I'm looking outside of myself to get something, and there's no chance. I have to be the generator for all of it. I have to promise what's missing.
Right. If we all become artists of love to different extents, not everybody is going to be Shakespeare, but, you know, that doesn't mean that we don't teach writing. Not all students will become the next Shakespeare, but we don't want illiterate students. So if we all create the schools where people can learn how to love, how to generate the love they want to see in their lives, they want to that energy of love to surround them, then we will have a society where love is abundant. And then it's not a need. It's really just a beauty, an art, and a practice that generates beauty, that generates joy, that generates more love. And that's why I have been so interested as well in polyamorous communities, because it is very frequent in those communities to hold different kinds of gatherings and workshops and events where this these skills that enable people to generate the love they want in life are taught. Also, tantra communities are that way.
We're actually going to pause here for a moment on that, because I want to talk to you about specifically, in the next segment, we'll talk specifically about some of the kinds of exercises that you're speaking about, things that you're familiar with. I may be familiar with some of them as well, but I'd like people to know what you've experienced in those that could help them to learn about that. When we return, we'll talk more about that. Yeah,
yes.
We'll just talk more about that. So my question for women out there is, are you a woman who could use a little zest and zing and more arousal in your life? Or do you know a woman who could use this? Many women have said that the feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally as they would like. And so that's why I'm going to recommend Zestra. Zestra was developed to provide a much-needed option for women to feel more sexually satisfied. Zestra is a safe and patented blend of botanical oils and extracts created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient, single-dose personal packets, and each individual packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts fresh and safe from light. Zestra starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes, and the initial sensations are called the Zestra rush, and then the effects tend to peak at around 10 minutes, and they can last up to 45 minutes. And here's a good thing. Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. I believe that all women deserve sexual satisfaction, and if Zestra is something that you could use to have a breakthrough in your arousal response, why wouldn't you try it? It's hormone-free and it's topically applied. So I highly recommend Zestra. For more information about Zestra, phone 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please say that you heard about it from Laurie Handlers on Sex and Happiness. We'll be right back.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Laurie Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Laurie Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and my guest today is Serena Andolini D'Onofrio, and she is a PhD who is actually a professor of humanities at the University of Puerto Rico, Mayagüez, and she's published many pieces on Gaia, the New Politics of Love, which is about eco-sexuality, and if some of you remember, I did a show on that about being green in your sex life. She's also the editor of Bitopia and Bisexuality and Queer Theory. And so we're going to talk more with her. In the last segment, she was talking about how she had gone to some polyamory gatherings and some tantra gatherings where people seemed to be more open to exercises on generating love. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that. Of course, I do know something about that since I'm a tantra teacher and a sacred sex educator, but my knowing it has nothing to do with what you've experienced. So let's hear from you, some of your experiences.
Yes. Well, I started connecting with the polyamorous communities on the East Coast when I moved to Puerto Rico about 15 years ago for a professorship in at the University of Puerto Rico. It seemed difficult at that time to really generate polyamory on this island. It seems a bit easier now when people are reaching me, they read my books and they are local and they say, well, why don't we begin to generate it here too? But this is very recent. Initially, I felt that it was better to perhaps connect to existing communities on the East Coast. I have never lived on the East Coast. My American home, as my matria, my homeland, feminine homeland as an American, is in California. That's where I studied and where I lived for many years. So that was really my interest, is really to connect with networks of people with whom I felt I could have an affinity. I had been a bisexual activist and scholar for a while, and I felt that probably these circles would be a good haven for people who were bi-curious or maybe even bisexual. And in reality, according to studies, slightly more than half of all polys define themselves as either bisexual or bi-curious. When I say a haven, I think it's a little bit of a positive word for what other people call a closet. In other words, a place where one feels welcome, even though the primary identity, the primary concept that really unites the community is not bisexuality, but polyamory, which is more defined as the ability to love multiple people at the same time and conduct healthy relationships with them with full disclosure. Okay?
Yeah, that's a good definition. I like that.
It's really more this ability to expand the field of love to more than one person and conduct these relationships honestly and with disclosure of all parties involved. And that is a great lesson of life, because one has to be aware of what our behavior generates in others. And so one really learns to be more connected with one's feelings and the feelings of the people that surround us. So perhaps one point that I think is very important in polyamory is the concept of compersion. And to make it very simple, I want to ask this question. Okay, often people think that if you have many lovers, you're polyamorous. But the reality is that you're polyamorous when you are capable of holding the space for others to love each other.
Really?
Well, it's a more advanced stage.
So wait a minute. Let me see if I can translate that into what I understand.
Yes.
Meaning, if I have a lover that I'm madly in love with, mm-hmm. if I could hold the space for my lover, like, and I'm emphasizing the word my, mm-hmm. you know, like the possession of someone,
right?
Which I'm not into that, but if I hold the space for my lover to love someone else, mm-hmm. that's what you, is that the translation of what you're saying?
Right.
So that's a big space. You're talking about a stretch for somebody to confront their jealousy, their possessiveness, their ownership. That's why I said my that way.
Yes.
Their every image that they had of mm-hmm. mommy and daddy or whatever in their life, mm-hmm. that confronts all of that cultural stuff.
Exactly. And there is a name for it in Pali language. It's called compersion. Compersion is the ability to enjoy when our lovers are being loved by someone else. And some people call it the opposite of jealousy. I don't think it's the opposite of jealousy. I think it's a transmutation of jealousy. It's a way to spiritually transform through the chakra system from the root chakra to the heart chakra and the throat chakra and all the crown chakras, this energy of scarcity. Again, if we think that love is a need, we attach feelings of scarcity around love. And that's often associated with jealousy. When we feel jealous, we say, okay, so I'm going to lose my possession, right?
How
to replace that?
So, or something. There is some loss. It might not be losing possession, but I could lose face. I could be humiliated. I could compare myself.
Yes.
So I might not lose the actual possession, but I'm at some loss.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the privileges that come with that position as the possession of so-and-so.
Right.
You know, and often jealousy is felt in the dantian, in the lower chakra area. It's like something, a force that clenches your dantian, your abdomen, whereas if it's transmuted often through meditation. That's the way I do it, through meditation, through breathing, through connecting with other people who can empathize with it, who can put it in a context. Then it really transmutes in a space of openness in the heart chakra, where you feel that the fact that this person is receiving, this person you love is receiving the love they need from someone else, can free some space for you to focus on something else or someone else. And in any event, it really enriches the field, the energy field between those people who are involved in this network of sustainable love. And so that is called compersion.
Wait, why do you call it a network of sustainable love? That's interesting.
Because what happens in polyamorous circles is that relationships evolve in a network, and in a network of friends who are also amorous friends. One comparison that I have you heard of permaculture?
Yes.
Okay. Permaculture is a way in which different plant species help each other grow. Okay?
Right. They're like symbiotic.
They're symbiotic, and it's a lot more sustainable than monoculture. Monoculture is what Monsanto does. Don't exactly want that. So permaculture is a mutually sustainable network of plants that help each other develop and grow. And it's symbiotic but not parasitic, because parasitic could be excessive. It's a form of symbiosis that kills the host. It's not a great thing.
Right.
But as long as you stay in that level of sustainability where there's mutual sustenance and nobody gets to be the victim of a parasitic exploitation, then that, you know, that's how these networks of emotional sustainability work. You see, and they are very powerful. I've seen people turn around their lives completely because they have relied on these networks, and these networks have nurtured them in you know, shifts that they had to make in their lives. Or I've seen people be in a period of crisis, and the network itself then helps sustain that crisis to where it becomes not all that critical and the person can come through.
Now, I have to tell you that in my early exploration of discovering what polyamory was, I heard it referred to as polyagony. It was, the tools were somewhat crude, or certain people went into it who maybe weren't strong enough constitutionally, or maybe at the time, this is quite a few years ago, maybe at the time there were not, the networks were not as prepared to usher somebody or host somebody through these kind of drama.
Oh yes. And I would say that polyamory is not drama free. I was a student of drama, so I love it.
I love that you said that.
I think, you know, today drama has become a sort of code word for some kind of primitivism.
Yeah.
Drama is, according to Aristotle, is the most sophisticated literary genre. It's something to register, to consider. And it is really a very sophisticated literary genre. And I feel that psychologists use it as shorthand for some form of dysfunction that they should diagnose. I don't think that entrusting knowledge about love to one field, psychology, is a good idea. I think that love is a multidisciplinary concept that is interpreted differently from different disciplinary viewpoints, and that really involves all of life. I say that love is the ecology of life. There's no one that, from a professional viewpoint, can have jurisdiction about what love is. So
glad you said that. Yeah. I really think that is such a great, it's just such a great ground of being.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome. You. Yeah.
I don't know where we left off, how I went on that.
Well, because I was talking about polyagony.
Oh, polyagony. Let me get back to that. So the way I see that is that to really expand the range of emotions that enable us to feel compersion, which we defined a bit earlier, we also have to expand the range of sensations. The range of sensations, and by that I refer to the lower chakras, the dantian, the root chakra, and the sex center. We expand the range of sensations, and we also expand the range of emotions, which refers more to the higher chakras, the heart chakra, the throat chakra, perhaps. So these two ranges of emotion expand simultaneously. We expand one, and the other one expands. Then we expand the first one, and the second one expands. It's like a cycle.
Right.
So I would say that experiencing erotic ecstasy with multiple lovers expands your range of sensations, but then that also expands the range of emotions. Then you realize that when your lovers are experiencing that ecstasy with someone else, they are just also expanding their range of sensations, and they will be able to expand the range of emotions they can feel with you. So there's really no loss, but there are critical moments. The way I see it is like there are different rings, and it's a bit like a firewalk to go from one ring to the other, because we have to become deprogrammed.
Yes, and it takes time.
From love as need, from love as instinct, from the object of love as a possession, and we have all been programmed to that. So it is not exactly easy or pain-free to deprogram oneself. But again,
right,
if we expand the ability to withstand that pain and that difficult moment, and we don't lash out to the universe for causing it. We go within and say, how am I generating that in my chakra system? Then we become able to experience more joy.
You're making really strong points. It's good and very articulate about it. It's kind of like you're translating this, I feel, for anybody who, whether they would understand or they wouldn't understand, or, you know, whether they came, whether they're listening and they came with already a take on it, you know, or a prejudged opinion about it, and all of a sudden what you're talking about makes so much sense. It's like, oh, yeah. I mean, you're really appealing to people who are left brain making sense out of something that when the feelings go woo and you're on the ride and there's the sensations, the physical sensations, but there's also the feelings, the emotions, all that, you're making such a great sense and case for people to just open up and experience and experiment and just see what happens. Yeah, I applaud you for that.
I have to say that I live my relationships as an experiment, which doesn't always please all my lovers, especially those who wish to remain anonymous. But,
right.
You know, and I have my teachers. One of my.
Well, wait, we'll open the next segment with that.
Okay, thank you.
You know, how you juggle your lovers and ones who want to remain anonymous, and how does that work? And then your teachers, how does that work? And like that. You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers. And today I am interviewing Serena Andolini D'Onofrio, and she is really going into very specific detail and making a case for opening up to the possibility of multiple lovers. And it's really deep stuff. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about how she actually juggles all of this in her very own life.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent Life Wave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers. And today I am talking with Serena Andolini D'Onofrio. And she really is talking a lot about how being open to the possibility of more than one lover, or being open to the possibility of expanding so great that one would want to experience a lot of sensation to grow and stretch and then allow one's lover, and allow isn't even the right word here, I think encourage would be a better word, encourage one's lover to have that same kind of experience with others. And this involves bigness, real bigness, and I'm sure there's a lot of confrontation of smallness along the way, everything that shows up when one is stretching oneself to be big. So, Serena, we left off and you were talking about how you juggle this, and that's my word, juggle, but how you have lovers of yours experience this, especially if they want to remain anonymous. I mean, that's just, it would seem to me that's only one challenge.
It's only one challenge, and it is sometimes a challenge for me because I am very public about my positions, and so, you know, people might want to know what my sources are, but I also refer to some of my teachers, for example, and I want to mention at least two. One is Deborah Annapol, who is also a very close friend, and another one is Robert Silber, with whom I have taught a course, and some of my understanding of this expansion of the emotions and the sensations really come from his teaching. So I think when one keeps oneself in balance in a network of emotional sustainability, where some of the participants in the network are partners and some of them are ideal partners or teachers, people with whom one is not lovers, but with whom one can talk about love in these terms and who have expanded their ability, then it's not all that difficult. There's always someone who one can resort to if there is a difficulty in expanding. Because expanding never ends, and you know what seemed impossible today may be possible tomorrow, but then there is another expansion coming up. And I have been in periods of crisis, and again, you know, crises are opportunities to grow. So if one can transmute that crisis into an opportunity to grow by going within and saying, how did my sense of scarcity produce that crisis? Often a crisis is a result of a sense of scarcity, but the scarcity is produced by the fear of the fear. And
yeah, fear is what produces right. all of it.
Right. And it's the same way in which, you know, fear produces scarcity because we are afraid and then we want to accumulate and hoard a lot more than what we need. Why? Because we don't have faith that the universe will bring what we need toward us, and that if we are open to receiving, then we will see when something comes across that is what we are looking for, we will receive it. And then we come from abundance because we can, again, we feel we have the ability to recognize and to generate what we want.
I actually have a little different take. I mean, it's not
yes.
different as opposed. It's more like that fear and that feeling of lack
mm-hmm.
that gets generated. To me, I feel that's a habit. It's a habitual response, like an addiction.
Yes.
And because I have seen many situations, both in myself and certainly in my students, where there's an irrational fear there, and I call it irrational because it's not based on anything. There's no bear
mm-hmm.
that's threatening my life. There's no mm-hmm. terrorist raid threatening my life in that moment, but
mm-hmm.
there's a huge
mm-hmm.
feeling that feels almost like an out-of-control knee-jerk mm-hmm. reaction my description of it is like a downward spiral. And it is what you talked about, like clenching the lower abdomen and clenching the anus, the anal sphincter muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually feel that it's a conditioned response
mm-hmm.
that has become so the norm
mm-hmm.
and the reaction to so much of whatever's mm-hmm. happening in our world that it becomes a habit and that there is no actual fear there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you said it really nicely, if there is one,
mm-hmm.
but I think that many times there isn't one. There's just the,
mm-hmm.
that's what people generate instead of the love you talked about generating, instead of the expansion mm-hmm. or the awareness that you talked about generating, people just clamp down.
Yes, yes. Well, I was reading in this book, Conversations with God, which I stretched myself to read. I mean, I'm not a Christian. I don't believe in monotheism, but then, you know, monotheism is part of polytheism in the same way that monogamy is part of polyamory. It's the wider picture. And I was reading precisely this analogy that says that the opposite of love is fear. You see, when we come from a place of fear, we cannot come from a place of love.
Right.
And so transmuting that fear, if you think that, I don't know if 1 or 2 billion people on this planet live on less than $1 a day, then they're not afraid. So why should we be afraid, really? You know?
That, you've opened up a whole other can of worms here. I have thought that often, too, that whole thing about poor people seem, in various cultures that I've visited, seem to be really happy.
But they're not
and
poor. That's the point.
That's right. They're not devoid of spiritual fulfillment, of love, of nurturing, of going anywhere and being mommed and mothered by men and women and people in the culture and the town and everything else. We are, in Western culture, in Western civilization, isolated and apart and living in our little castles, which are devoid of those feelings of togetherness.
Yes, we've also lost the the connection with the metabolism of the earth. And this is, you know, when we look at ecosexuality, for example, this is very important. People who live with less than $1 a day, they know how to use the elements from their surroundings to make what they need, so they don't need the money. Like, you know, when I was in Auroville, India, local people cut a leaf from the nearby banana tree, and that's their plate. And they eat very elegantly, completely in style, from those plates. So they don't need a plastic plate. They have what they need. They have a cow, and they get the milk. They have a rice patch, and they get the rice. So not everything is monetized in their lives as it is with us. And they are connected to that metabolism, so they see that nature is abundant, and it brings to them what they need. Of course, that's not true everywhere. I mean, if you go to Haiti, it's different. You know, they've suffered terrible natural disasters. So, but in general, the thinking that when we become more connected to the metabolism of our hostess, the planet Earth, we feel that abundance. And it's the same with love. In a way, you know, the gentleness of nature is a form of love that we can be open to receiving.
It's great. It's really great. Love how you put it. Well, I actually wanted to know I think when you talk about bi-curious, that's what I'm talking about. When you talk about bi-curious, there are many, many people who are bi-curious. It's in their fantasies. Mm-hmm. It's in literature. It's in porn. It's in it's in Hollywood movies.
Right.
People being bi-curious, and sometimes that it's just that. Like they want to read a book about bisexuality, or they want to have a fantasy about kissing someone in their same gender or making love to somebody in the same gender, but they don't actually want to act it out. Or maybe they do, but they're just too afraid. If they wanted to be more close to being able to have that experience, like rather than watching it from afar, well, is there anything that you would recommend?
Yes, I would recommend participating in a scene where bisexuality is allowed. And there is a saying in bisexuality that says that voyeurism is participation. Suppose that you're talking about people who have watched, you know,
a couple making love, another couple making...
Right, where there is some bisexuality, some, you know, porn flicks, or because today we actually have very sophisticated porn that is an art form. So a lot of people, you know, what they're afraid to do in life, they do it by watching it, right? And they get turned on and they get also educated. And today there is a lot of very educational porn that is very respectable as an art form. So I would say if they want to move from that stage of the voyeur who look at something on the screen, they can be a different type of voyeur, a voyeur who is on the scene. And that happens a lot in bi circles, that people who are new are really more like the voyeur who participates, because it's a very different form of participation when you are present on the scene. And very often people negotiate, you know, negotiate boundaries before the scene happens, so that they feel safe when they enter the scene of multi-partnering.
And I need you to define scene, because...
Scene is a form of sex play. It's a form of sex play where there is safety, where there are boundaries, when there are scenarios that are previously negotiated, like a play party.
Yeah, yeah. And actually what you're talking about here is drama.
Drama
in the good sense, not in the bad sense. You know what I mean? In the sense of you were talking about before, a scene... From a drama.
My take would be that if the play scene, if the play party is not well negotiated, the scenarios are not negotiated, then you're going to have drama afterwards.
Oh, and yes, you certainly are. Okay. I can underline that and put it in capital letters.
if the scenarios are negotiated previously, you're not going to have drama after. You're going to have open-heart conversations where people reveal what happened for them at that scene.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who don't have enough experience of this, they go into the scenario without having negotiated the details and the boundaries of it, and then all hell breaks loose afterwards.
Yes.
Sometimes in the moment, people are enjoying, but then when the separation happens, then the experience resonates within and it brings up all sort of issues that one has buried inside. So experience suggests to really negotiate the scenarios between the players ahead of time.
And make sure that people feel safe.
Right. Then and the boundaries. Then during the scenario, sometimes some of the boundaries are challenged or are renegotiated during the scenario, but always verbally, like, can we cross that boundary? No. Yes. And
not now, maybe later.
Not now, maybe later. And then when the scenario is complete, when people exit the scene, have some time after that is open for open heart negotiations, for sharing, for revelations. Not simply have, you know, okay, the play scene is finished, so let's go home and never be heard of again, or disappearing from people's lives. I think that's very damaging, and it can cause a lot of drama and a lot of distress, to the point that people who've tried this for the first time may not never want to try it again.
Thank you. That is thorough and excellent in terms of letting people know what they can do. We're going to pause here for a moment, and when we come back, we're going to find out how people can get in touch with you and what all the different ways they can find you, you know, like other tips that you have for people. So you're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers. I'm interviewing Serena Angelini D'Onofrio, and she is giving us some very helpful tips for those of you who are listening today who have been bi-curious, or people who have been wanting to have multiple partners and just didn't even know how to get your toes into the water. And if it's not for you, it's not for you, but it's certainly interesting to find this out, because there might be people in your life who are actually participating this way and you don't even know. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's H-O-R-M-O-N-E, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and I'm having a great time today talking to somebody who really knows something about negotiating sexual and loving scenes that seem out of the ordinary, and perhaps they are, and perhaps they're not. Perhaps they're more in the ordinary than most people know. And there are circles and communities and groups of people who participate in having multiple partners, making sure things are negotiated and making time for people to reintegrate. And that's what Serena was talking about earlier in the show in the last segment. So you have a lot of things that you've published. One of the things I'm looking at is a blog. You're a blogger at Poly Planet Gaia. And maybe, I'm not sure if that's the best place for people to find you, Serena. Where would people find you and find your writings easily?
Yes, well, I haven't, let me go through the whole range of social media where I am present. On Facebook, I have a profile under Serena Angelini. I also have a book fan page, Gaia and the New Politics of Love. So those are two ways to connect with me for people who are on Facebook. I also have...
Wait, I want to spell Gaia for people.
Gaia, G-A-I-A.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Gaia and the New Politics of Love. I also have on Amazon.com an author's page. My books keep selling. They're not bestsellers, but they are for people who are maybe a little more left-brained than most, but still are quite interested in some of the intellectual aspects of these experiments in erotic connections. And so there you find all the full range of my books in my author's pages, Serena Anderlini D'Onofrio. The easiest way to find me on Amazon.com is if you put in the title Plural Loves. Plural Loves. It brings up one of my books, and then from there you go to the author's page and you see all the other books.
I'm glad you said that, because your last name is, although I could say it, it's a little challenging.
Right, it is challenging. But Plural Loves, that's the only book published under that title. So what comes up is my name. Then you can learn how to spell it.
Great.
Okay. Then the blog I run is called Polyplanet Gaia, and it's found under polyplanet.blogspot.com. And it's also very easy to bring up, because a lot of people go to it. I publish a whole range of different things on Polyplanet Gaia, things that really stir me to life, that make me rejoice at that moment. For people who are interested in coaching sessions, I also have that, and it's called Bonobo Coaching. And to find out more about, if you're interested in a coaching session with me, you go to Polyplanet Gaia, and there you find under category Bonobo Coaching, and then you find out.
You mean bonobo like the bonobo monkeys?
Exactly. How can you
bonobo coaching?
Bonobo,
I love
coaching.
It.
How can you learn to move beyond the box if you want to be coached to be a bonobo, somebody who can partner easily, set boundaries easily, and multiply, and be a resource of love for others, as others also are a resource of love for them.
I want to point out here that the bonobo monkeys are the species that use sex when there's any kind of a disturbance in the community or a confrontation in the community. Instead of becoming warlike, they become lovelike. So I understand why you chose the name Bonobo Coaching.
Right, right. They use sex, and they use also cuddling. They use all kinds of expressions of affection that generate oxytocin, which is that hormone of connectedness that enables people to see each other as friends rather than enemies. So they avoid that energy of hostility that then causes so much loss, you know, to destruction.
Yes.
Yes.
And then
Polyplanet Gaia. It's a blog. There are a bunch of different things there. One can become a fan. And Bonobo Coaching is one of the categories, one of the posts, and explains what Bonobo Coaching is. I invite all your listeners to connect with me if they feel that they want to know more about how to explore bisexuality.
What is this? You have something else too, though. You have an educational nonprofit called Three-Way Kiss. That's another lovely name. What is that about?
It's a nonprofit that enables me to set up events, workshops about themes that I know, like ecosexuality. The course I did in ecosexuality in Italy last year was done through that nonprofit. I've done seminars, one-day workshops under that nonprofit. It's not a very big nonprofit, but it's the concept for me is, you know, a kiss is something very intimate. How do we make it more inclusive? There are many people who don't have enough love on this planet today. So if we can open up a two-way kiss to another person, it's a very intimate experience, and it's an expression of love to be inclusive that way. You can't do it with everyone, but sometimes it enables to spread the energy of love more widely. It enables us to be a resource of love.
Well, Serena, what do you have coming up? Do you have any new or next projects that people want to know about? Because clearly you've really accomplished a lot just in terms of publications and in terms of workshops.
Yes.
And you have a very clear way of explaining what's going on. So what else do you have coming up?
Well, there is a major shift happening in my life. I feel that my chapter of my life here in the Caribbean is coming to a close. So there's a number of changes that are happening, and they involve new projects. One is a book of inspiration and self-help called What is Love? It could also be entitled Dialogues with Gaia or Conversations with Gaia. I'm not too sure at the moment, but really it's a book about these deeper aspects of love beyond need, beyond instinct, love as an art. That's one. Another one is a study of sexual fluidity and amorous inclusiveness in Italian cinema. I have taught Italian cinema, and so I have experienced that very deeply with my students. I want to create a book that analyzes that in more detail. That's more of an academic project, not a self-help book. And some other projects, developing a team of people who work on all these issues together, creating larger collaborative research projects. That's about it at the moment.
That's great. I want to come back to something you said earlier that I feel a little unresolved about, and that was something about your lovers or slash partners who want to remain anonymous, because we kind of slid right over that.
Yes.
And we have just a few minutes left, but how do you resolve that when you want to have multiple partners and someone that you're with wants to be exclusive, at least about their own identity? Do you put a mask on them?
Exclusive and anonymous is different. Some people can afford different degrees of outness. You know, I myself have certain boundaries. I work for a public university, and so I only do things that are legal.
Right.
It's not because I approve of the law, it's because I abide by it.
Yes, I understand that.
So people who are different in different professional venues need to observe boundaries that are different around how public they are about how they conduct their personal lives. And my wisdom is to learn to respect those boundaries. Once the boundary is respected, the person might want to cross it.
Well, that's precisely what I said earlier
about
that.
If you push it, then they might even retreat further. Like, for example, so different lovers that I have different boundaries around this. A female lover, a woman who's been my lover here in Puerto Rico for a couple of years, with a relationship that is sometimes off and on because I travel a lot, is very, she has a totally accepting family, totally non-homophobic family. So she's very out about the relationship she has with me, even though it's a non-exclusive on my side. Other lovers I have in East Coast, to be more generic, East Coast, some of them are more open. They are polyactivists. They host poly events in their homes. And others are a little less open publicly because they are in lines of work that require more privacy. So I learned to respect those different boundaries. And the more you get into this, the more you become subtle about how to respect without feeling inhibited by that respect. I tend to be a push. I tend to push people out. That's my tendency. But
yeah.
I also become more careful about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to cause damage to people I love.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for going back there with me. I just felt like we skated over it, and I really wanted to know what you meant by that. So, well, this has been a most wonderful show with you. I appreciate you so much for coming on and being so clear and so articulate about this subject. I hope that our listeners appreciated it as well. I want to give people, again, they can find you, give them one more time the website or the actual blog site.
Yes, Polyplanet Gaia, which is at polyplanet.blogspot.com. Also,
that's
they can be under Serena Anderlini on Facebook and under Gaia and the New Politics of Love on Facebook. I invite all your listeners to click that fan button. It makes a big difference when I negotiate my next book contract.
That's great. I encourage everyone to push my fan button as well.
Okay.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest today. For everyone else, I want to thank my sponsors. Of course, Zestra, my sponsor, and Valerie Handlers, my sister, with her LifeWave patches. You can find her at valeriehandlers.com and find out how to get out of pain or how to sleep better. All kinds of things are amazing with these patches. And I want to thank HormoneNurse.com, Lori Phillips, who talks and teaches people about getting their hormones into balance and also shows people how to lose weight on HCG. Thank you so much for being my sponsors, and thank you everyone for being my listeners. I can't wait to be with you next time on Sex and Happiness, when we'll be talking about the headache in the pelvis, how you get rid of pelvis pain and how important that is to your sex and happiness. Until then, I'm signing off for Sex and Happiness. This is Laurie Handlers. Bye now.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Laurie and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Laurie's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-